Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, an update direct from Disneyland, expanded mobile ordering, more progress as the parks prepare to reopen,
crowd estimates on when the parks do open, where the Wonderground Gallery went, we discuss Tarzan's Treehouse, and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Welcome to DL Weekly, a podcast about Walt's original Magic Kingdom, Disneyland. We cover the latest news and information from the resort, test our skills at trivia, and have a discussion about the parks every week. We invite you to send in your feedback and stories. Our contact information can be found at dlweekly.net. Now sit back, keep your hands and arms inside the podcast, and enjoy this week's show.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of September 23rd, 2020. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Teg Bushman. We'd like to send a shout out and a big thank you to Emily G for increasing her support and for everybody else for supporting the show. This support helps make DL Weekly possible. Without the community's support, we would not be able to produce the show and get through this difficult time. The supporter Discord chat has been a great source of Disney magic from our supporters, like theme topic days, movie nights. We just had Black Panther that everybody watched the other night. So lots of stuff going on in there. Well, if you would like to become a weekly tier yourself and have some more Disney magic in your day, head on over to dlweekly.net/support to sign up.
There is still a ton of uncertainty with everything going on right now, but one thing that is certain is that Concierge can help you plan your next Disney vacation. Even though there is not an announced date for reopening as of this recording, it is never too soon to start talking to the folks over at Concierge to get your trip planned. They are kept up to date on all the latest news and information on bookings, tickets, closures, and more. The team over at Concierge is there to help in any way possible. Why wait? Talk to the Disney fans over at Concierge and get started. Head on over to concierge.com and don't forget to mention that DL Weekly sent you.
Well, DL Weekly logo stickers are now available. We have two versions for you to choose from, watercolor and the classic white. These durable stickers are great everywhere. As I have here, if you're watching the stream, on my water bottle. Teresa has hers, but doesn't have the water bottle up here.
My water bottle, it's my work water bottle, so it's
so
at work
right
now.
Work. Yeah. Fancy. These are really durable stickers. They're great to put anywhere. Your laptop, even. I don't put stickers on my laptop, but I know people love putting their stickers on
and
the laptop.
And these do have a UV coating on them, so they should hold up well on your car as well.
Which is a big deal, especially with the watercolor version. If you'd like to get one of these, head on over to store.dlweekly.net. To order yours now.
Now let's get to the news. At 10 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesday, Disney Parks Experiences and Products held a press conference to give an update on the Disney Parks approach to operating during COVID-19. On the call were VPs from the Animal Kingdom, Epcot, Walt Disney World Hotels and Resorts, and Patrick Finnegan, the VP of DCA and Downtown Disney. Closing remarks were given by Josh D'Amaro, the chairman of the division. 8 out of 10 guests feel that safety measures are just right at both Walt Disney World and Downtown Disney currently. Disney plans on providing COVID testing in their communities, with details to be announced soon. Josh D'Amaro joined from DCA and expressed how important Disneyland is to the economy in California and how 80,000 jobs rely on the resort. The biggest line was, "We are ready, and more importantly, it is time."
It just reminded me, we talked about this in the chat today, and I posted a picture from Lion King. It is time. And, this has been the big thing for everybody. It depends on who you look at and what the headline said. So some headlines were saying that Josh D'Amaro is calling out Governor Newsom and demanding that they get open. That's not what I read this line as. I just read this line as, we're ready. We can do it safely. We've proven in Florida, we've proven at all our other parks around the world that we've been safe. Guests, 8 out of 10 guests say that all the measures that are in place are fine and they feel safe going. We, obviously, Teresa and I went and we felt safe going. I know that after we talked about it on the podcast, a bunch of our listeners have decided to book trips to Disney World because they want to scratch that Disney itch. And from us telling them how safe it was, they want to go. So it is time for things to open. And as we go through the rest of the podcast, there's more pointers to the fact that this is definitely getting more and more ready to happen, at least on the Disney side of things.
I do think, because a lot of people were speculating that with this press release today that we were going to be getting some news as to either maybe a date as to when the parks plan to reopen, or at least some sort of plan on the parks reopening. For us that kind of live in Disney news and Disneyland news specifically, a lot of this felt like things that we already knew. This may be stuff that a lot of the general public maybe doesn't follow as closely, so it could have been new news to them. But I do kind of feel that since there was this press conference, but there wasn't like a big new announcement.
Well, you watched this, didn't you?
I didn't watch it. I watched live updates from the Laughing Place. They had they were able to watch it, and they were providing updates and little tidbits as it went through.
Sure.
So to me, it kind of felt like the Disney parks saying, like you said, we're ready, let's go, let's do this. And I feel like maybe the intent was to possibly not call out Governor Newsom, but to put a little pressure on the state and kind of put the ball back in their court and like
say, we're ready.
Mm-hmm. Your turn, you know, like just tell us how to do this and let's move forward. So it'll be interesting to see if, you know, if the governor has some sort of not reaction, but if he has a response to this or what the state says after this.
I think this is also important for potential guests to see as well, because they're saying, here's all these things, guests that have actually gone and experienced downtown Disney and Disney World think that it's safe. Mm-hmm. Here's all the steps. They outlined a bunch of stuff we've talked about on previous episodes, so I didn't put it in the story to read, but they outlined all the stuff that they're doing, the temperature checks and the face mask, you know, enforcement and everything. So all the stuff we've been talking about, they kind of re-outlined that all the steps that they're taking and how they've thought on their feet, and they've changed things as time has gone on. Like they got rid of the neck gaiter thing.
Yeah.
That they implemented the thing about not walking and eating at the same time, that you have to be stationary. So all of those things together, I think, is really just trying to not only kind of put pressure on California to say, yes, you guys have done everything, and to make the public also think, why aren't these things open? The way it kind of sounded to me with this as well was that Disney feels like it's unfair to the amusement industry. Like retail stores and all these other places can be open, but these amusement enterprises can't. And I kind of understand, because going and riding an attraction is not at all important, but neither is going to, like, you know, American Eagle or something, or going to the movie theater. Yeah, but all those things are fine. But anyway, when Disneyland does reopen, mobile ordering is going to be expanded just as it was in Walt Disney World. And just like in Disney World, it will be the preferred way for guests to order their food while in the parks. Apple Pay and Disney gift cards will also be allowed in the app. And the minimum age for mobile ordering will be lowered to 13 years old, down from the previous 18 years old. There is currently no updated list of locations that will offer mobile ordering.
That's interesting. I guess I never, since it didn't directly impact me, I never noticed that the age was 18.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, and I think a good move that they lowered the age down. Mm-hmm. Perfect, because then, like, if you're with your kids, you can have your teenager help do your mobile ordering while you're busy doing, who knows. Anyways, off topic. But I think that's great. I think it makes a lot of sense. When we were in Walt Disney World, I believe we've talked about how they were very heavily encouraging, and in some areas, that was the only way you could order was through mobile ordering. Mm-hmm. Again, makes sense. They don't want to have too many people crowding if they can avoid it. So mobile ordering is a very easy solution. You know, and the thing that's awesome is I feel like the technology has gotten easier to use. It's gotten quicker. The first time I used mobile ordering, it felt,
Was that when Pixar Fest was going on?
I don't remember, maybe. Anyways, but it felt kind of, I don't want to say clunky, but it just didn't seem as easy and convenient as how I feel about it now. So
sure.
I think they've kind of worked out some of the bugs. It's easier to navigate the menus, which is what I really love it for, is I like looking at the menus. The other super helpful thing was with Walt Disney World right now, I'd say half of the restaurants and dining locations aren't actually open.
Yeah.
So it was really nice for us when we were in the parks, we could pull up the app, and on there you could see
what
was open, what wasn't open. Super handy, super convenient. We didn't have to waste time trying to figure, you know, say, oh, let's go check this place out, and to walk all the way over there and go, oh, never mind.
So right.
I think it's going to be a super helpful tool, especially when the parks reopen.
What I thought was interesting was in Disney World, it seemed like the smaller locations were the ones where you were able to still walk up, like the Dole Whip stand or whatever. You didn't have to mobile order there. But the bigger thing, Satui Canteen, even the place in our hotel was like, you have to mobile order. And if you don't have something, I think you could, like, work with a cast member to mobile order, but they were not letting people through the gate. Basically, you could not go into the restaurant unless you had a mobile order that was flagged as ready to pick up.
More progress has been seen in the parks in preparation for the reopening of Disneyland. Hand sanitizer stations have appeared all over Buena Vista Street in Disney California Adventure, and crowd signage like Enter Here have also been spotted. You guys, there's been a ton of movement in both parks. It's a little easier to see in California Adventure for two reasons, just because of how it's set up. There's that kind of
They don't have a train station in the way.
Exactly, blocking it. But the other thing, too, is right now you can walk up to the gates of DCA, whereas Disneyland, they actually have it blocked pretty far back.
Yeah.
And they have security monitoring, so you can't walk right up to the gates of Disneyland. So that's probably the biggest thing. But there's all sorts of signage. A lot of signage looked very familiar because it was stuff that we saw at Walt Disney World. So at some of the stores there, they're going to make it so you have to enter in one way and then exit on another. So they've got the signage up in front of the stores.
And some doors are do not enter or exit.
Yep. And they have ones blocked off completely. And this is so as you enter and exit, they have a cast member at the entrance and the exit, and they're counting. They're counting how many people are coming in, and the other one's counting how many people are coming out. And it was really cool. We actually talked with a cast member, and they told us that not only could they see how many people were in their specific location, but they could actually pull it up and see how groups and crowds were moving throughout the resort. So super fun technology there.
Yeah, it was funny because the app itself literally was simple. It had like a plus and a minus, and it like read the number. And so while Teresa was...
It looked like a digital like lap counter.
Yeah. And while Teresa was shopping for something, I had gone out and I was talking to the cast member. I'm like, oh, that's a pretty simple app, huh? And she goes, oh, it's really complicated because we can look at how many guests are in any store on property. Like Teresa said, crowd flows and stuff. Very interesting how they do all this stuff. I do feel like the fact that they are adding all of this stuff now means that they must feel like they're getting closer to opening.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it doesn't hurt. It's all stuff that they're going to have up and in place for when they do reopen. So you may as well do it now when you've got time and resources and just be that much closer to when they do get the go ahead. They don't have to push it out as far.
A numbers story.
Oh, perfect.
I love a numbers story. The Thinkwell Group released an estimate that Disneyland could maintain social distancing measures at 50% of pre-COVID attendance capacity. This was calculated using the estimates from the Themed Entertainment Association of 500 to 650 guests per acre. With the 6 feet of distance, that leaves 140 square feet per person and 200 square feet for groups of three, Thinkwell estimates. In the end, 25 to 30,000 visitors per day could visit and properly distance.
I don't know why, but I was shocked when I read this. And even just reading the headlines, I was 50% capacity? There's no way. That seems like a lot of people. And then them estimating that means like 25 to 30,000 visitors per day and still being able to maintain social distance and all that. That's crazy to me. So I don't think, it's all a guessing game. I don't think when Disneyland reopens, I don't think they're going to open at 50% capacity. I feel like they're going to open like Walt Disney World and be closer to the 20 to 30% mark just to be extra safe. Because the other thing too is it's Disneyland, right? So you've got a lot of areas that have more narrow pathways. Lots of choke points. But then the other thing, too, is you can't really... I mean, I think it helps now that we have the app because you can look at wait times from the palm of your hand, but you still can't really control crowd patterns super, super well. So even though you have 50% capacity, what if all of those people are in the same quadrant of the park or whatever? So I feel like they're going to... I don't think they'll go this high, but it is good to know that that these people think that 50% would still be doable. So that makes me feel better that Disney World has gone even less.
Well, and the fact of the matter is, you know, Disney World, when we were there, I think was a lot of locals. I don't think there was a lot of out-of-town people. And Disneyland is a locals park in general. Mm-hmm. So I feel like people are going to be better at listening to cast member directions, especially with the fact that it's been over 6 months. People have been without it. By the time it opens, it'll probably be over 7 or 8 months. And so, I think the people don't want to take the chance that it's going to get closed down again. So I think one thing that I thought was interesting was the way they calculated this was an individual person needs to have 6 feet of distance. But if you're in a group,
that's true.
You don't have to have 6 foot for me. Like Teresa and I didn't stay 6 feet apart at Disney World. We stayed at normal distances and we stayed 6 feet apart from everybody else. So what?
I'm just imagining you and I doing the parks from 6 feet
from
each other.
How's it going?
Let's go this way.
We would have had our own boat. We could have been in two separate groups. We would have had our own boat. Me in the front, you in the back.
Maybe we should have pretended we were in separate groups and maybe just completely had ride vehicles 100% to ourselves the whole time.
Maybe. But anyway, so that was interesting to think that it goes, so you have 140 square feet if you're one person, but you can add two extra people and you're only adding 60 extra square feet, which is crazy. Anyway, I love the numbers. I think it's kind of cool. I agree with you though. I'm not sure that 50% capacity, the way Disneyland is laid out, would be conducive to that social distancing.
Well, and it's not like you can, again, I'm reiterating, but it's not like you can control the flow of how people are going through. And I know that they've talked about it before about, well, you could very easily make the park just kind of like this one-way thing and make everyone...
But you've seen that during parades where people are like, go this way, and people are going to backtrack anyway.
I think that's just super difficult to do.
Plus, what if you're in advent... Let's say that you go clockwise, so you get forced to go into Adventureland and everything and then come out of Tomorrowland. What if in the morning you want to go over to Space Mountain? So do you have to walk around the entire... You know what I mean? Like, you'd have to walk through that whole thing.
So then your people wouldn't be eaten up by attractions as well. Because everybody would be going the same way.
Indiana Jones would be a long wait. Jungle Cruise would be a long wait. Pirates would be a long wait. Haunted Mansion. Yeah. And then Space Mountain would have, like, no wait. You could even almost wait, like, an hour to open those attractions if that was the case.
Well, the likelihood of the trams returning when the park reopens is pretty slim, considering that Walt Disney World has been open for months and trams have not returned there yet. So Disneyland has turned its tramway into a pedestrian walkway this past week, installing signage, benches, and trash cans along the route from Mickey and Friends as well as Pixar Pals parking garages. This isn't the first time that this has been used for pedestrians. It was used this way before on heavy attendance days like New Year's Eve.
Yeah, so I've talked about this on the podcast before when I was there for one of the New Year's Eve things. After 1 a.m. or whatever when they closed, there was no trams at all. Everybody had to walk back to the parking garage through the tramway because it obviously is big enough to handle a lot of people. Mm-hmm. One good thing that literally just as I was saying that, if you're parking in Mickey and Friends, which is probably what will happen when the parks reopen because the surface lots is not going to be enough to hold everybody. Right. You could socially distance better on that tramway than, like, a sidewalk.
Definitely. It's much wider because, remember, you had trams going both ways on it, coming to and from the park. So it's, very wide. It's almost like walking down a city street.
I'm still wondering, though, even with Disney World, why haven't they reopened the trams? Because you could do like you do with the attractions or like we did on the Kilimanjaro Safari, where they put up a barrier in between each of the rows and then they leave an empty row in between.
I don't know if maybe part of the problem is people waiting for the... Like, I feel like there's a lot of moving parts with the tram. There's people waiting for the tram. There's people getting on and off the tram. So I wonder if there was just maybe too many cinch points that they weren't sure how to do it effectively.
I like the fact that they're using that space, though, and I think that this will be a good use of that because people are all going to come down to that tram unload. Now it's an unload area, and they'll just be able to walk along that path.
It is, there has been, and people in the chat right now are talking about this, there has been some people that are a little worried because it is a long way. You don't think about it when you're sitting on the tram enjoying
You're basically in the back of the park.
Yeah, and if you're a nerd like me, you're trying to, like, peek in and look behind the gates and, like, see some backstage stuff. But it's a long way from one side to the other. So a lot of people were saying that they were glad that they had the benches because some people might want to take a break, especially after a long park day, having that hike back to the car. So it'll be interesting to see how it all pans out. And who knows, maybe they are able to bring the trams back sooner rather than later, and this will just be a very temporary thing.
Well, the other thing, too, is they might even do something where they bring, like, some golf carts or something, and people that have, like, a problem walking or something, that they could, on a case-by-case basis, get them to the garages if that was the necessary thing. The other thing, too, you got to remember, there is still that drop-off area that's on the other side on the harbor that people could get dropped off there, and then their party could drive to the garage and park. Mm-hmm. And then when they're done, they could just do the opposite, too. So, well, in another positive sign of possible reopening coming sooner than later, the floral Mickey in front of the Main Street train station has been refreshed.
The other fun thing, too, that has been spotted is that not only is the inside of the park getting refreshed. I'm so excited to see a fresh Mickey floral. He just looks so much happier now. But right out in front of the turnstiles, they actually have social distancing markings on the ground. So this is not after you've entered the park. Oh, no, this is them preparing for you to be socially distanced as you're standing in line waiting to scan your ticket before you enter the golden gates of Disneyland. They're not really golden. They're green, but you know what I mean.
It could have been golden gates when California Adventure before they redid their entrance.
Very true. Well, last week, the Wonderground Gallery was taken over by Star Wars overnight. Rumors spread online that it was a permanent closure of the popular art gallery in downtown Disney. The new Star Wars Trading Post sells a lot of items that were only once available in Galaxy's Edge. There's been a lot of rumor and a lot of speculation with this literally overnight transformation. A lot of us felt like the rug had been ripped out from under us because
you love this place.
I love this place. A lot of people love this place, and it's so unique and it's so uniquely, amazingly Disney that it's hard for me to think of it just not existing. So I'm trying to believe that it will come back and that this is just temporary, which is the most sense to me. It's very logical, but the thing that really kind of got me worried was a lot of the artists that had their work in the Wonderground were also very public on their social media platforms saying basically that it was closed permanently and let's try and ask Disney to relocate it and contact Disney because we don't want to see the Wonderground Gallery closed. So I don't think I've heard anything specifically officially from Disney as to what's going on here. My takeaway is that once the parks reopen, I don't think it makes sense for them to have this trading post.
No.
So I just think it's temporary. The other reason I'm thinking and feeling that it's temporary is if there's been pictures that people have posted online of what it actually looks like. And all of the, they just have like tarps over the Wonderground Gallery sign. It doesn't look like the sign itself has been removed.
Yeah.
They don't have anything inside that's permanent specifically for Star Wars stuff. They just kind of placed some things inside for some decor, but other than that, it's very, very minimum as far as decoration goes and theming inside.
Yeah, it seems
It seems like a pop-up shop or something.
Yeah, it seems like we want to sell Galaxy's Edge merch that was only available in Galaxy's Edge, but Galaxy's Edge is inaccessible at the moment, so let's throw it in this shop. And I think that they're probably making more money off of that than they were off of artwork or whatever through the Wonderground Gallery. Mm-hmm. I'm with you, though. I think that once Galaxy's Edge reopens, why would you have popular merch that before somebody had to pay to get to?
Right.
Why would you put that in an area where people don't have to pay to get to?
And they specifically made it
right
so that you had to visit Batuu to get these things. Because you had to visit, like, the Toy Maker, for example, to get specific toys
I think that they're... I think that their profit margins are so high on some of these items for Galaxy's Edge that it just doesn't make sense to not have the store open.
Well, the other thing, too, is flip side. Wonderground, as much as I love it, a lot of people, I think it's popular, but I feel like a lot of people go in to look. I don't know how many people are making big ticket purchases. Yeah, Wonderground Gallery. I don't know how many people are making big dollar purchases there because the artwork in there is fantastic. But it is on the pricier side, so not everyone can afford that incredible piece. Me, I love the postcards because I can get that artwork and I can have it like small and it's easy for me to bring back to Wisconsin. They've got a lot of stuff in there, but maybe more people go in there just to browse and just enjoy the art versus they're assuming that they're going to be bringing in more money if they brought goods from Batuu out.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is I think that we'll talk about it in the next story. Well, Star Wars fans that are collecting the various lightsabers from the Star Wars universe have the opportunity to choose the next saber to be released. The options are Anakin Skywalker, Qui-Gon Jinn, Kanan Jarrus, and Ezra Bridger from Star Wars Rebels, Cal Kestis from Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order video game, and Lord Kovacs. Head to the link in our show notes to cast your vote now through October 1st. I personally really like the Cal Kestis lightsaber. Of the options that are going to be available, because I thought his was really interesting because I played the video game. So it's kind of like one that is made from like spare parts and stuff.
Yeah.
Anakin's looks like a lot of other people's lightsabers. It looks almost like Darth Vader's in a way. Qui-Gon's kind of, same thing. Ezra looks a little beat up. This Lord Korvax one is the most unique that I've seen. It's got kind of this...
It looks like a medieval sword.
It does. Producer James, if you were going to pick one of these lightsabers, which one would you vote for?
Now, do you vote based on look or character?
You vote. Well, that's the question, right?
If I'm voting based on character, I'm picking Kanan Jarrus. If I'm voting based on look, I like Ezra's the best.
So which one do you like, Vern?
I'm torn between Kanan and Ezra. I feel that Rebels doesn't get enough love in the Star Wars universe. I feel all the cartoons, too many people haven't seen them, don't know enough about them, whatnot. So having Kanan and Ezra available for purchase is awesome. I would really like to see Ezra's original lightsaber, the first one he made that had the stun blaster attached to it.
Oh, yeah.
But if Kanan's is disassemblable, like he does it in the first few seasons when he doesn't want to admit that he's a Jedi, so he keeps it in two pieces, that would be absolutely perfect. But also, I mean, Qui-Gon Jinn is a very nice nod to a character that only had the one movie. If I had to vote for only one, my vote's going to Kanan, but I have mad respect for five of the six. Anakin, I've always had my scruples against Anakin anyway.
So. Well, his looks almost to me like it almost looks like Vader's, because Vader's is very similar to that.
See, I wonder looks like, why.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
But I mean, like, they already have the Vader
looks,
one.
And it's Luke.
All right. So, Teresa, which one did you like? You're not a huge Star Wars fan.
I'm not a huge Star Wars fan. So I would pick, I'd probably pick Korvax's just because it's so different. Yeah. Just because like it's so different. I do really like Cal.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that one. Those are probably my two favorite.
Cool.
The Mandalorian will be returning with Season 2 at the end of October, but if you want some child, also known as Baby Yoda, in your life before then, you can pick up a new travel blanket that features the little green creature. The blanket folds up in itself and includes a trolley sleeve for easy transport. You can pick one up for just $24.99 in Downtown Disney. As soon as I saw this, I thought, if this existed before we did our road trip to Walt Disney World, you would have owned it and this would have been your, like, thing.
Maybe. Maybe. I also thought that I was going to be able to bring Taglet, which is my version of Baby Yoda, with me.
But I
ended up leaving him in the window of the hotel room because it was just too much.
He just hung out at the resort all day. That was a pretty okay trip for him.
But this thing's pretty cool. I don't know. What do you think? I feel like you like things that are easy to carry with
like
you.
Like pack. Yeah, I do like things that are easily packed. So the fact that this folds up in itself and becomes kind of like a little pillow, I think that's pretty awesome.
Well, a new set of mini ears came and went at Downtown Disney this week. The retro Disneyland mini ears are blue sequins for the ears with the vintage Disneyland lettering in place of the bow. On the band itself is the saying, "The happiest place on earth." They are $29.99 if you can find them at the World of Disney. It seemed like these things came and went so quick. There was a lot of chatter in our chat today about these. They were saying that they looked like some that people had, some Etsy people had been selling for a while.
They do. I think they look similar, but they're also different and more uniquely Disney. The Etsy ones I saw like reminded me of the sign. This one, I like that it's got the correct coloring behind the letters.
Sure.
So it's more classic Disney sign. I also like the color choices on the Disney version better too.
I do like the Disneyland one. However, I wanted to see more of what these are made out of and like how sturdy they are, because I feel like if you were to put them down somewhere and it were to get bent, that they wouldn't pop back up or something. I hope that they have something sturdy in them to hold them.
I feel like, remember, ooh, you probably didn't see these, the ears that have the singing busts on them.
Yes,
this has
I saw
the same kind of like setup as what these ears do, and the busts are pretty darn secure. So I feel like these are probably, I don't think Disney would put out an ear that would fall apart super easily. So I don't feel like, even though the letters look like they're just kind of on like flimsy felt, I don't think they would be. And I love how they've been doing this with the headbands too, how they put little things on the bands that have something to do with it. So last week I was wearing my Peter Pan ears, and I love that they have the little metallic stars on the band. The 2020 ears that I got in Walt Disney World had 2020.
Yep.
The only
Which
place
is why
that
you
actually,
didn't care.
Yep, the only place that it actually had the date was on the band. And then these have the happiest place on earth plus one of the flags on the like the outside of the band. I think that's the outside of the headband portion. So I just think those are nice little extra touches that even though you don't see it, so like especially with my hair, you put them on, you can't see it. It's just extra magic that I know is there.
That's true. I realized that.
Yeah.
I can never see your bands. It's always just the ears mm-hmm. and the bow.
Yep. Well, Black Tap Craft Burgers and Shakes celebrated National Cheeseburger Day on September 17th. To honor the day, they offered a chance to win some prizes online. Possible prizes included discounts at Black Tap, free fries, and more. The grand prize was Heinz ketchup for a year, customizable Heinz swag, and free burgers for a year.
So I want you to explain to people, because you have actually won a free year of something before. For. Can yeah. you explain how this realistically works? It's not that you can sit and eat burgers as much as you want
well,
for the whole year.
Maybe that's what the thing is for them. I don't know.
But what
know.
Was yours?
So I, at a steakhouse chain called Texas Roadhouse, I won a year of free steak, which ended up being I got vouchers and it was... I think it was buy one meal, get one free for a year. And I was only able to use one voucher per month. Still...
Get
free 12, steak.
12 steaks.
I was okay with it because it was Vern and I going together, so we were always going to be buying two meals anyways.
Sure.
So it was, yeah, buy one, get one free for a year. And like I said, limit one per month. So I don't know. Maybe if you're going to get Heinz ketchup for a year and free burgers,
so
who knows?
This is funny. So this is a weird conglomeration of things in my mind. So just a couple weeks ago, I was on Reddit, and one of the Ask Reddit questions was people who have won... like a lifetime supply of whatever or a year's worth of something. Like, what did you get and what was it like? And,
oh,
and
yeah.
I thought about your thing, but they were talking about how certain things, like for this Heinz ketchup for a year, they'll just send you a case of Heinz ketchup and be like, that's probably about as much as someone would go through in a year. Although, if you were our nieces eat ketchup on everything, so I think it'd be more than a case of ketchup to keep them in Heinz ketchup for a year.
I was going to say, we're like a bottle, maybe a year family, so a case would be a lifetime supply.
We've been using a lot of ketchup for sauces lately. The EveryPlate stuff, they don't send ketchup. You have to, on the recipes that require ketchup, you got to use it, so... Well, now it's time to take a trip to Trivia Land, where producer Vern will try to stump us with some Disney trivia. He'll ask us four questions and maybe a bonus. We'll attempt to answer, emphasis on the attempt recently, and we'll get the correct answer after the discussion topic. What do you have for us this week, Vern?
Well, we are taking a trip into the land of listener-submitted questions. And thank you very much, listeners, for sending those in to producer James and I. We really do appreciate the help.
Is the land of listeners' questions, is that adjacent to Trivia Land? Or where does that sit on the park?
They're neighboring lands.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So I take a quick little trip over to land of listeners submitted, and then I bring it back to Trivia Land. And it's a friendly neighborhood.
Gotcha.
Yes. So tonight I'm only going to hit you with four questions, but the fourth is a bonus in and of itself.
Oh boy.
So hopefully we'll have fun with this. Our first question, submitted by listener Samuel S. The Haunted Mansion is home to 999 happy haunts, but how many doom buggies are making the rounds?
Ooh.
Teresa, you're going to lose your...
My Haunted Mansion.
Haunted Mansion badge or something. Let's see. I'm going to say, I'm trying to think like how many you see at a time, and then you got to like spread that out through everything. I'm going to say 140.
That's crazy, because think about how close they are together and how long that attraction
is. So what
I
did was, in my mind, I thought, okay, the loading area is a good stretch that you can see a bunch.
Yeah.
And in that loading area, you might have 15.
Can
oh, maybe 140
on
should be more.
Quick?
Let me say 240.
I'm doing math on my phone quick.
Are you just doing math on your phone, or are you Googling?
No, she's got the calculator up.
For my guess, I'm going to say 300.
I said 240, you said 300. Okay.
Mm-hmm. How I thought about it was, so I was like, I just rounded how many I think I see in the loading area.
Mm-hmm.
And how long are you actually in the loading area for?
Sure.
And then I multiply that by how long I kind of feel the ride is.
Okay. So what did you come to?
So I just rounded. I think I feel like I see 10 doom buggies.
Right.
And we're probably only there for like 30 seconds. And it's probably about roughly 15 minutes. because you also have the part that
okay,
you're
but
not
then
on.
How many did you say?
300.
300, okay. All right, moving on.
So what are your guesses, 240 and 300?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, our
good
second...
Good luck editing all of that.
Yeah. It's my life every week, I'm telling you.
Our second question, submitted by listener Cameron A., which Imagineer did Walt ask to design the Golden Horseshoe, not knowing that this Imagineer had also designed the same saloon for the movie that it was based upon?
That's a crazy good coincidence.
Herb Ryman. I don't know.
So I'm trying to think of, like...
Imagineer names that worked in the studio.
But that also... That would have been working at that time. But also ones that I know weren't working on other parts of the park at that same time. I don't know. I'll say Herb Ryman, too. I have no idea.
We're both on the Herb Ryman train.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. That's a good one.
Our third question, submitted by listener Chris Y. In October of 2004, what is something that American Olympic champions got to do that no one else has?
Swim down an Olympic-sized swimming pool on Main Street.
Oh, yeah. I remember reading about that. Because I was not there.
I was like, yes. I know this one.
Yeah. I would just love to have seen the pool down Main Street. I just can't.
Did you not see a picture of it?
Well, yeah. So
I know
I mean,
it's a picture.
Actually see it.
It was cool. Like, they set it up for, it was a couple days, I want to say. That's a great trivia question, though, because it allowed me to, like, remember that
you know,
and share that.
It's much better than, like, swimming a lap in the rivers of America or something like that.
Much cleaner, too,
yeah,
I would guess.
Yeah.
And our fourth and bonus question, submitted by listener Wesley H., can you name the tiki gods and goddess in the Enchanted Garden outside of the tiki room? Bonus, what is each of their abilities?
Didn't we have this question before?
Yes, and we didn't do well at it then, and I don't think we're going to do well today. Pele.
No. Pele. There was...
Maui?
Tongaroa?
I need to pay more attention
to the What's
the
one that gets
pre-show?
All angry that says, like...
Of fire and volcanoes. Some say I torment Purnagendi, the earth balancer. For when my violent temper rises, the earth trembles on its foundation.
Legends say I'm balancing the earth, but sad to say, I'm just hanging on.
I'm the one who's really sad. When I smile, it comes out mad!
I give up after that.
Okay, so what we say? Pele.
Maui, I think, was one of them.
And you said...
Tongaroa.
So that's your answers.
Yeah, that's our very sad answer.
Yeah, we're not very good.
So did Tag and Teresa.
I'm too busy eating my Dole Whip during the pre-show.
Last time you would have seen it, we missed it because
they didn't even show us the pre-show last time.
Did Tag and Teresa answer correctly? How about those of you listening at home? Do you think you know the right answers? Keep listening after the discussion topic and you'll find out.
There's the only one I know that I think we got was the pool. No,
oh,
the pool.
Well, this week we are going to actually talk about the history of an attraction that has been around for quite a while. However, it has undergone a facelift in more recent years. We are talking about the history of Tarzan's Treehouse. So, as many of you know, before Tarzan, there was the Swiss Family Robinson. But
before we move on, I feel like we have to talk about this first. Did you ever experience Swiss Family Robinson?
I did not. And so I was very sad that we assumed it was closed when we were at Walt Disney World, and it actually wasn't.
I would like to say, for me personally, who have experienced both, I enjoyed the Swiss Family Robinson version better.
So before Tarzan, there was the Swiss Family Robinson, but how did a treehouse even become part of Disneyland? The history of this actually goes back to 1960 when Disney released the popular live-action film Swiss Family Robinson. For filming, a large treehouse was built in a 200-foot spread salmon tree in the Goldsboro Bay area. The treehouse was crazily solid. It was built to hold 20 cast and crew members at a time.
I love tree houses in general, so I would have loved to have seen this. It would have been so cool.
The thing that was really neat is after filming was complete, the locals actually begged Disney to let the treehouse remain, and then it became a very popular tourist attraction. However, sadly, the treehouse was destroyed in 1963 by Hurricane Flora.
So it was only out, like, hanging out for, like, three years?
Yeah, not very long.
Oh.
Not very long.
That's sad.
But Walt saw how popular the old treehouse set was, and he felt that children of all ages wanted a treehouse of their own. So he decided that the Swiss Family Robinson's treehouse would be a great addition to Adventureland, which it's crazy to think of it this way, but at that time, the only attraction in Adventureland was a Jungle Cruise.
Well, I mean, up until Indiana Jones opened in 95, it was just the treehouse and Jungle Cruise still. I mean, there's only...
The Tiki Room.
Oh, yeah, I guess there's the Tiki Room. But still, like, yeah. For a land, I mean, I guess New Orleans Square only has two attractions.
Yeah.
And Galaxy's Edge only has two. Okay.
Your country has two. It just feels
Fantasyland's the one that has a ton of attractions.
Yeah.
And Tomorrowland. Well, Imagineers thought that it would be a waste of time, energy, space, and above all money. Good thing they weren't in charge. They did not think the guests would want to climb up to the top just to turn around and walk all the way back down. I cannot disagree with them here. Although I will say, and I'm sure we'll get to this, but I want to say now that I do love going up Tarzan's treehouse. Because of the view that you get up there of, like, the Rivers of America and stuff. So that's
very
worth the walk
views,
up and down.
Very similar views from Swiss Family Robinson's treehouse, too.
The tree cost $254,900 to build. It utilized 6 tons of reinforced steel and 110 cubic yards of concrete. There are 62 concrete routes that go down roughly 42 feet.
Isn't that crazy?
So I watched a Adam the Woo video recently, and he went to, and there's actually a plaque there in orange... In Orange, California, there is a tree in a park there that inspired the look of the tree itself.
Yeah.
And if you go there, it definitely looks like that. And there's actually a plaque there that says that the Imagineers used this tree as inspiration for it. So, crazy. Well, the steel limbs had an 80-foot span and supported 1,000 branches with 300,000 handmade vinyl leaves and floral blooms.
Right, just let that sink in. 300,000.
Well, think about
handmade.
Well, think about a tree, right? There's tons of leaves, and you have to artificially do all that's crazy.
But, yeah, the thing too is we'll get into how many leaves. The Swiss Family Robinson treehouse had way more leaves than Tarzan's treehouse actually does.
Well, still, it's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
The leaves and blooms were all not only created by hand, but attached by hand. That is also crazy. Landscaper and Disney legend Bill Evans dubbed the tree Disneyodendron Semper Florens Grandis, which means large, ever-blooming Disney tree.
Which, even though they have made some modifications to the tree, it is still technically still called the Disneyodendron Semper Florens Grandis.
That was pretty good. I didn't even have to like screw it up. I just did it on the first try. That was amazing.
Well, when the attraction opened in November of 1962... It was a booming success, and adult tree climbers actually outnumbered the children 3-1. The guests climbed up 68 steps to see the different rooms and areas of the house, and coincidentally, you had to descend 69 steps to get back to the ground level.
Okay.
Depends on, I guess, the ground that you entered at was slightly higher than the ground that you
exited. Well, it's only one step different,
yeah,
so sure.
Yeah. Well, the Swiss Family Robinson treehouse closed in March of 1999 because it needed to make way for a new family. Even though it was a classic, it was unfortunately losing popularity. Guests began to just sort of smile, enjoy the music while they walk by. The attraction actually had dropped from about 1,200 guests per hour to just 300 guests visiting and climbing the treehouse per hour. The other thing, too, is they were noticing that, you know, even though this was a classic fun movie, a lot of people didn't have the same connection to that family and to that movie, so it wasn't as exciting and they didn't understand the placement as much.
Well, Imagineer Tony Baxter, I love Tony Baxter, was in charge of the tree's transformation. In 1998, he got to see a rough cut of Tarzan and felt that the film was extraordinary.
Think about that. He saw a rough cut. He did not see the final version of the film.
Sure.
And like felt so inspired by the rough cut of it. That's why we have Tarzan's treehouse today. That's interesting to me. Also, I need to point out, I'm very embarrassed that he didn't know this. I did not know Tony Baxter was in charge of this transformation.
I didn't either.
I was very excited to find that out, though.
Well, he felt a great depth of emotion in the film and care for the character. The film was centered around home and family, just like the Swiss Family Treehouse. Now, I'm going to admit, I've never actually seen Tarzan.
Oh, it's good.
I've actually
it is good.
Never actually seen any version of any Tarzan ever.
The only version I've seen is the Disney animated version, so I guess
I'm aware of Tarzan, whatever. Like, that's what I know from Tarzan.
I think maybe our next movie night might have to be Tarzan.
Maybe.
It's good. I don't think it did as well as Disney hoped it had done.
Well, didn't it have great music? Wasn't that, like, one of the things about it?
Very great music. I thought it was a very good and moving storyline.
Sure.
And just like Tony Baxter said, you do feel, like, a lot of, like, depth of emotion for the characters. So
maybe I'll have to watch it.
Yeah, it's good.
Well, Baxter's biggest fear, of course, was that they would make all these changes and the same 300 people per hour would visit. Can you imagine? However, when Tarzan's Treehouse opened, they were hitting the 1,200 per hour almost immediately, and he knew that they had made the right choice.
Yes. Well, Tarzan's Treehouse did open in June of 1999. It towers 80 feet in the air, which is about 10 feet higher than the original tree.
Well, the tree didn't get anything, right? They just upped the...
Oh, no. The tree got an enhancement, too. We'll get to that later. But the tree not only received some height, but it received a massive makeover, 6,000 replacement vinyl leaves, a new suspension bridge entrance, a new two-story artificial tree, which helps suspend the bridge, was put in place. Well, the other thing that this tree did, which I think is cool, is it helps the transition between Adventureland and New Orleans Square feel less abrupt. So, you know how I am about transitions between land. I like when they're smooth and seamless. But the plan was not to just remove all of the Swiss Family items and just replace them with new Tarzan items, but they wanted to really make it feel like Tarzan's tree. So to do that, they did some simple things, like they swapped out the Swiss flag for Great Britain's flag, which is on top of the tree. And they also hung moss and vines to change the feel of the tree, because the Swiss Family tree was more of a Caribbean.
Sure.
Whereas Tarzan's tree needed to feel more African. But some of the biggest major change that they made was actually adding the 10 feet to the tree.
Huh.
They raised the main trunk by 10 feet. So they actually, like, cut it, lifted it, and, like, put a new section in.
Why?
To raise it up.
It just seems like a lot of work for, like, 10 extra feet.
I think because they added the bridge and did other things to it.
I mean, like I said earlier, one of my favorite things with this addition is that they added that second tree that you enter on and you go across the suspension bridge. I think that's, like, one of the best parts of that whole attraction. But, and that's actually one of the best spots to look at things, because you could stand up there and see the Rivers of America. Of course, it's closed at night when, like, Fantasmic's going on. Mm-hmm. That would be a great spot to watch Fantasmic.
That's why it's closed, because it's a great spot.
Well,
but it's... I mean, I've only ever experienced Tarzan's tree, but for some reason, it's really hard for me to not know that it's hard for me to think of that bridge not being there.
Yeah. Well, now, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's just like when Tony Baxter, again, came up with the idea to do the bridge that goes over the queue for Pirates of the Caribbean, because that bridge wasn't always there.
Yeah.
So when they added that, like, I can't imagine a time that wasn't there.
Right,
well, I mean, for me, it was always there because it was built before I went my first time. But, like, seeing pictures back then, it's like, oh, this bridge wasn't there. Well, Tarzan's tree weighs 150 tons, features 450 branches, and is still anchored 42 feet into the ground. Well, of course, like, you don't want a breeze hitting it and knocking it over. The treehouse features several rooms in the branches that are connected by stairs and ramps. The rooms show key scenes from the animated film and use life-size fiberglass figures, which I feel bad because I feel like there's always the leopard. Is it the leopard that's there? It seems like people keep breaking his tooth off.
Yeah, people always mess with him.
Well,
that's okay. He's a villain, though. So
yeah. Well, the figures were digit. It scares the bejesus out of you, too, because I think they have a motion thing when you go to here. It goes,
wow! Yeah, it, like, snarls at you.
Yeah. The figures were digitized from the maquettes used in the making of the film and then enlarged.
Isn't that cool?
So it's pretty accurate.
They look like they just, like, stepped out of the film. They look so... I don't want to say realistic, but that's the best way I can describe it.
Did you give me one sentence and then whatever the heck this is?
I figured you and I could go
off of those.
Oh,
okay. Okay. I was like, okay. Anyway.
Well, Tony Baxter's original idea was actually to use folk wood carvings to represent the characters.
Oh.
Others had suggested that they use audio animatronics, which kind of feels necessary, right? Disney's known for their audio animatronics. However, Baxter felt, and I think rightly so, that using audio animatronics would not be the way to go, since they would be out mainly only in the elements. But even worse than that, it's a walkthrough attraction. So the guests could just stand in front of said attraction, and you're not that far from these figures if you've been in Tarzan's treehouse. So you could stand there and watch them for as long as you wanted and hear all the, you'd be able to hear the mechanical sounds that they make. So in regular attractions, so like Pirates of the Caribbean,
you move by quickly and they're further away.
The attraction gets to see the guests see the figures briefly, but it's also controlled. So Disney is controlling how you're seeing that animatronic, whether that's lighting, whether that's sounds around it, smoke,
the fact that you only see it for a little bit of time.
Yeah, all that. So they have way more control over the experience there than they do in the treehouse.
I never thought about that. I did always wonder why it was they were motionless.
Static, yeah.
Well, the Imagineers included tributes to the original attraction. This helped save money, add detail, and pay homage to the Swiss Family Treehouse. I want to say, I feel like my mind is playing tricks on me, because I feel like one of the things I really enjoyed about the old treehouse was that they had a water wheel that would like bring water way up.
Yeah.
But they don't anymore.
No.
And that's something I miss.
They have, actually, they have little things in here that kind of pay homage and like they point out.
Yeah, but I missed that.
I know. Well, the reason that that was there, from what I could understand, again, full disclosure, I did not experience the Swiss Family Robbins treehouse and I have not seen the movie. But from what I could gather when I was doing the research, is what that did was it pulled water up and it delivered it to all of the rooms. So this would have been something that the family would have needed when living in the treehouse. So it doesn't
fit,
fit with Tarzan, unfortunately.
But it was so cool.
But some of the things that they did include that you can still find today, or you should still be able to find today, if not, let us know. But the blue ore on the entrance staircase is actually from the original fence. And lower railing pieces on the entrance staircases are also from the original treehouse's railings.
Yeah, I mean, because, of course, they had a crashed ship, and they used their ship pieces to build the treehouse for Swiss Family. So the ship's bell is from the Swiss Family's library. The seashell planter is originally from the main living room. So lots of little things.
Mm-hmm. There's a chest in Kala's room that you could originally... There's a chest in the room with Kala that was originally found in the Swiss Family Robinson's parents' room. The paneled side walls is in the exact place. And there actually used to be an organ that sat in front of that paneled wall. And then also there's a chest in Saber's area, which is originally from the boys' room.
So a lot of chests that
lots
could be.
Lots of chests.
Yeah. Well, one remaining branch of the original tree leaves still exists, hidden under the final room, but is only visible from below. The hanging barrel is also from the original tree. I got to look for this branch now.
I know. I'm super curious about this branch, too. So did you notice how there was, what, 300,000 leaves on Swiss Family Robinson's tree, and there's like 6,000 leaves on Tarzan's treehouse?
We just had 6,000, yeah.
Isn't that crazy? So I don't know if they only did 6,000 leaves to replace it. I feel like there's got to be more.
Yeah.
But crazy. But
it's just a lot of leaves.
It's a different layout. The treehouse now has a much different feel than what it looked like for the Swiss Family tree, like the original Swiss Family
treehouse. Did they keep kind of a lot of the layout of the rooms?
Yes and no.
And they just replaced like the inside stuff?
Yes and no, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I need to find somebody's like walkthrough of the late 90s and then watch a Tarzan walkthrough and... Because I don't remember how you got up and down before, because I'm so ingrained in my memory that you go up now through the new tree in the middle.
Right. Well, there's a rope ladder on the mast, and it is actually the original bucket chain from the water conveyor system.
Oh.
Many of the new orchids are planted in buckets that are also from the original treehouse's water conveyor system.
The curious baby elephant known as Little Squirt is from the Jungle Cruise's sacred bathing pool.
I thought that was interesting. So not specifically a nod to the Swiss Family Treehouse, but a nod to a nearby attraction.
Mm-hmm.
But there are several lampposts that are from various locations of the original treehouse, and many of the light fixtures are also from the original.
So originally, Imagineering had plans to upgrade the Swiss Family Robinson Treehouse, including more kinetics for children to interact with. A lot of expensive nautical antiques were purchased for this new concept, but got absorbed into Tarzan's treehouse.
I thought that was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So they were able to reuse things that they, well, not even reuse, because these things hadn't even been used yet. They purchased them for future use. So I thought that was cool that they were able to incorporate that. The most famous and probably most well-known nod to the original is the famous Swiskapolka, which was composed by Buddy Baker for the film and later at the original attraction, is playing on the Victrola gramophone near the base camp. So the thing that's so cool about this is Tony Baxter is quoted as saying that they felt that it was very appropriate because what happened to the Swiss family happened somewhere in the mid-1850s, so that sheet music could have easily been recorded around the turn of the century, which is when Tarzan was taking place.
Oh.
So the fact that there was a gramophone in the animated Tarzan film at the camp, it kind of all just really like fit and worked out, and they thought it was a great way to pay homage to such a wonderful piece of Disney music. So what they did was they took the Swiskapolka and converted it over to a very scratchy recorded version, and that's what you hear on the gramophone.
Huh. That's super cool.
I know.
So it was funny when you said that this should be our discussion topic tonight. I thought, oh, this will be a very short discussion topic because there can't be that much to talk about. It's just a tree. But man, we talked about it.
Leave it to Teresa to find all sorts of random details and go down all of the rabbit holes you can go down.
Yeah, it's, you're right.
It's so interesting. It's super interesting. Well, now it's time to return to Trivia Land with producer Vern and get the answers, the correct ones, because I don't think we gave them to you. But get those correct answers to this week's trivia.
Listeners, thank you. You came through and you sent us some really good ones. Our first question, which was submitted by listener Samuel S. The Haunted Mansion is home to 909 happy haunts, but how many doom buggies are making the rounds? Your guesses were 250 and 300?
240 and 300.
Mm-hmm.
240 and 300. The correct answer was 131.
Wow. Oh, I should have stuck with my 120. I would have been closer.
140.
Was it 140? Oh, I would have been 9 off. Dang.
Wow, it seems like there's way more in there. Crazy.
The second question, submitted by listener Cameron A. Which Imagineer did Walt ask to design the Golden Horseshoe, not knowing that they had also designed the saloon for the movie it was based upon?
Not her.
The movie was Calamity Jane, and Harper Goff designed the Golden Horseshoe for both.
Dang!
We should have known that.
Yes, we should have.
Your third regular question from listener Chris Y. In October of 2004, what is something American Olympic champions got to do that no one else has? The correct answer, swim down Main Street in an Olympic-length pool that stretched Woo-hoo! Almost the full length of Main Street.
The one and only. That's the one and only we got right this week. Dang. Good questions this week, guys.
And your fourth question that included your bonus from listener Wesley H., can you name the tiki gods and goddesses in the Enchanted Garden outside of the Tiki Room? Bonus if you know their abilities or description. You got one. Pele, the Hawaiian fire goddess, lives in the... I apologize to anybody that speaks Hawaiian. I am going to torture all of these words. The Hawaiian fire goddess lives in the Kilauea volcano and likes to torment her neighbor. There's also Ngende from Fiji. He is the creator of all the gods. He also got a big job as balancer of the whole world. That pressure, combined with the torment he suffers from Pele, it's no wonder there's an earthquake every time he moves. The god Maui, the Polynesian trickster who
we
gave
said
people...
Maui.
You did. Oh, right. Sorry, you got two right.
Okay.
The Polynesian trickster who gave people time and roped the playful sun. Also star of a famous movie. The god Rongo, the Polynesian god of agriculture, also known as Lono in Hawaii, is also the provider of food. He also discovered electricity, naturally. The god Koro, the midnight dancer, under whose spell all ladies and men learn to dance. The god Tangaroa, which did you say that one?
Tangaroa,
that could be me butchering the pronunciation. Also
You'll
known
give
as.
It to us?
Mapui Kafunga in Maori tales. She is the goddess of the east winds, which bring rain. I will give you that one and we'll assume that I'm pronouncing it wrong.
Sure.
Okay.
And lastly, Hinakalua, this Hawaiian mistress of rain from Hilo, Hawaii, keeps it in the family. Oh, her daughter Hina is the mother of the trickster Maui.
Wow. You know, I'm pretty impressed that we got three of them.
So thank you very much to our listeners, Samuel S., Cameron A., Chris Y., and Wesley H., for contributing those questions for us this week.
I think you mean stumpers, because those are really good questions.
I got a book this week that I thought would be good to pull trivia questions from. It's a scavenger hunt Disneyland book, and the place I ordered it from, for some reason, sent me two of them. So I think, are you keeping it?
I haven't even looked at it yet.
Oh, Teresa might keep it. If Teresa decides not to keep it, I think I might give it to somebody in the community. But it's a scavenger hunt, which has like a ton of things where some of them I think you could convert them to trivia questions. It's like when you go in, which, because they're all multiple choice.
Sure.
Which one of these four authors is not on the bookshelf in City Hall or something?
Yeah.
So they have a lot of stuff like that.
Dang.
So we know how Tag and Teresa did tonight, but how did you do listening at home? Do you think that you have some good questions that could stump them as well as we did this week? If you'd like to join the pool of people that contribute questions to producer James and I, the address for that is trivia@dlweekly.net.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, have courage, be kind, and spread some Disney magic.
And I hope next week we report on an opening date, but we'll see.
You're going to jinx it.
Yep.
Wow. Well done.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.